From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Well, if you're looking for excellence in schools all across our great state, you have come to the right place today. Joining us on School Talks will be the brand new band director at Warren Mott High School, Caitlin Gaynor, from De La Salle Collegiate in Warren, Dan Roan and Greg Essler, the Macomb County High School Teacher of the Year, Gail Ashburn, and from Saline School's Superintendent, Dr. Rachel Kowalski, and Executive Director of Operations, Dan Clary. All this and a whole lot more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Caitlin Gaynor, the Director of Bands for Warren Mott High School and Warren Consolidated Schools. Welcome to the program, Caitlin.
Thank you.
So, Caitlin, knowing firsthand all about Warren Consolidated Schools, where I was superintendent, I know you're coming into a position that some pretty big shoes to fill, given the legacy of the previous band director. And I think a good place to start would be, what inspired you to pursue a career as a band director?
So it all began with my love of music. I still remember the day when they came to the elementary schools with all their instruments, and I saw the flute, and I was like, that's it. I went home from school, and I was like, Mom, please, please, can I get a flute? And she's like, you got to wait till fifth grade. Like, just wait a minute. And I was like, okay. And then when I still remember the day I opened the case, and the rest was history. I just fell in love with music, fell in love with playing, got in every ensemble I could, from orchestra to band. And so it really started with that love of music. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I got involved in building community and being a part of a lot of different community groups in my high school and throughout college. And I was like, what can I do that has both community and I can share my love of music? And so then I was like, let's do it. Let's become a music educator. And I can do both those at the same time and really impart that joy that I found with music to others.
Yeah. Speaking of college, you went to Michigan State University. And how do you feel that program prepared you for the position you have now?
That served as the foundation for everything, from my conducting to my music philosophies, learning how to select repertoire, and then to all the incredible people that I met during my time there, from the professors to other classmates that are now out in the field and music educators today. I still talk with those people regularly and those mentors to really learn mm-hmm. and continue to grow as an educator.
So when you entered Michigan State, did you have to audition for the marching band? Was that part of your enrollment? Is that how you started?
Yeah, I actually auditioned for the College of Music. Mm-hmm. And did auditions for a few Big Ten schools, but ended up selecting Michigan State because of the flute professor there, Richard Sherman, who is phenomenal, and the band staff that they have, and then kind of got involved with the music program from there.
So from all that you learned at Michigan State, what are some of the most important values and skills you hope to instill in your new students as band director?
I hope to really instill hard work and determination for a goal. As a musician and in music, it's not just one day and you get the music and you got your performance. It really takes that consistent hard work and effort to become a great musician. So I hope to instill that. I also hope to instill creativity and kindness in my students through the community that I build.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned kindness. I can remember my days as a high school principal. So often when you would visit a band room, it was pretty much like a controlled riot. Right? There's kids and tuning and lots of stuff going on. And given this is your first opportunity as a band director, as I said, in a pretty storied tradition, how do you plan to continue or create that positive environment so all students feel welcome there?
Yeah, I hope to. That starts, I feel like, with the energy of the director, and I hope to really invite as many people in as possible through my kindness, through my patience and care, and dedication to the program, but also just so bringing those kids in, whether that's through music that we're playing that they really want to play, whether that's through their friendships and their other friends in the program. I mean, kids are in band either because they love their instrument or they love the people that are there. So sure. Finding opportunities to make sure they create those friendships and are also playing super cool music that they like.
And one of the neatest things about band, whether it's symphonic band or cadet band or whatever, is you have such a variety of students. And in your role as a band director, what is your approach to actually selecting the music or the repertoire that would meet the needs for the students, especially given they're at varying ability levels? How do you approach something like that?
Right. And I usually approach that through picking a variety of pieces, one that might address some of the easier skills that students are still developing, but then also a piece that's going to push them to learn some new musical skills, and then also a repertoire that interests them, whether it's a different style of music that they haven't learned before, whether it's in a different meter or with some different rhythms that they are still learning. So just varying the selection of repertoire from easier to difficult, but also creating opportunities for them to learn new skills within it.
We're currently chatting with Caitlin Gaynor, the brand new director of bands at Warren Mott High School and Warren Consolidated Schools. Caitlin, let me follow up on that. With regard, I remember this in band where students compete for chairs, first chair, second chair. Is that still happening in bands?
It's still happening some places, depends where you are.
Yeah, and following that thought, how do you motivate students who otherwise either are disinterested or, more importantly, maybe struggling at their instrument?
Yes. One, it's just finding out if they're disinterested, why? Is there someone in the program that they're friends with? Is there a reason that maybe they don't have the right materials or right instrument? Is there something that they're missing that I could help provide them to have a better experience? And then maybe if they're disinterested because they're not interested in the music, can we pick more interesting repertoire for them to become engaged? And furthermore, if they need more support on their instrument, can I help them connect them with someone to take lessons with, a section leader to help work with them? Can I help them before or after school with whatever they're struggling with their music to kind of pull them into the program as well, because you need everyone to really have a great band.
So, you know, in many other curricula in schools, teachers have grade books, and as they go through a typical quarter or term, they keep track of student progress, whether it's homework, quizzes, tests, and so on. How will you approach, as a band director, tracking student progress, given it's performance-based?
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of just said it, but partly through their performances, whether that's performing with the marching band during their football games, whether that's our concerts and then festival during festival season, but also through playing assignments, memorization checks for our marching band music, and small little assignments to kind of hear individually how they're playing, but then as well as the general big performances are a way to assess as well.
Mm-hmm. So given the size of Warren Consolidated Schools, and there's many other band directors, how do you anticipate collaborating with the other music educators in the district?
This is something I'm super excited about, especially given Warren's awesome community. There's the two other neighboring high schools. I will get a chance to work with them and hopefully put on Bandorama this year, which Warren Mott is going to be hosting. So we'll have all of them over at the high school collaborate to put on this great marching band festival. And then furthermore, I'm really excited to work with the middle school and the elementary directors to really build the entire program all the way through having a middle school night at marching band and having them over for a field trip during the school day.
So I have to share with you some really good inside information that many, some people know, but not everyone. The band director at Sterling Heights High School, Anthony Imbrononi, I taught him high school English just a few moons ago. So when you see him, make sure you remind him of who his high school English teacher was. Absolutely great guy.
That's awesome.
One last question. What are your long-term goals as band director, given really how need of an opportunity this is for you?
Yeah, I'm really excited to both carry on the incredible traditions that the previous band director created in this program and work with this community that is just so dedicated to music education and to their students, and just to continue to support that and support those traditions, but also grow the program, hopefully get some more students in marching band. Currently now we're around 90, really hoping to push over 100 and get as many kids involved as possible, continuing the tradition of our jazz program. The jazz program is really great, and just continuing to create these opportunities for students to be a part of high-level musical experiences. Meanwhile, I hope to continue to grow as an educator through my conducting and through bringing the students on a variety of travel adventures or trips to both perform as a marching band, but also perform at a high level with our wind ensemble. So
Caitlin Gaynor, the brand new director of bands for Warren Mott High School. I can tell you this, you may feel fortunate to have received this opportunity in the district, but I can assure you the district is the lucky one here. Keep up the great work, and I wish you a great year.
Thank you so much.
Up next, we'll chat with the leadership team at De La Salle Collegiate. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program from De La Salle Collegiate in Warren, Michigan is Greg Essler, the Director of Student Advancement, and Dan Rohn, the Chief Operating Officer and Varsity Boys Football Coach. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Great to be here.
And thanks for having us, and we look forward to, you know, talking to you guys, explain a little bit about our school.
I appreciate it very much. So I'll start with you, Dan. Can you best describe your current role at De La Salle, especially as a COO, and how it has evolved over time there at the school?
Absolutely, and it's definitely evolved. I came here 6 years ago from the west side of the state as a football coach and athletic director, and you know, over the years we've had some adjustments in our administration, changes, and you know, I spent a lot of time in Catholic education, working in facilities, assistant principal, dean of students, so understanding a lot of those hats gave me an opportunity to kind of take a bigger role with the school, and this year I've transitioned to the chief operating officer, and it's been interesting, but it's a great opportunity, I think, to continue to build what we're doing over there.
How about for you, Greg?
Well, my job basically is to connect with De La Salle to our alumni, families, and friends of the program to raise the necessary funds to give our students a high-quality education, not only for now, but in the future.
And, you know, you mentioned the alumni connection. I'm sure you're probably best suited. What would you consider are some of the most cherished traditions at De La Salle that you believe define the school's culture?
Well, number one, one of the most iconic figures in radio history is one of our alumni, J.P. McCarthy, a 1950 grad. So I think that's a big advantage that we have, is the fact that we have 11,000 living alumni throughout the country who are professions in medicine, finance, attorneys, the religious life. But our alumni give back, and I think that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. Internships to our students. We just had one a little while ago, cardiologist, where a student's interested in going to medicine, and he was able to do an internship over the summer. So I think that's a big advantage, and our alumni seem to always want to give back and help.
Mm-hmm. So Dan, in your new role as Chief Operating Officer, how do you see De La Salle balancing these longstanding traditions that Greg talked about with embracing new initiatives, especially at the school level?
Well, I think it starts, one, with the fact that, you know, our LaSallian education is obviously fostered in the deep roots of Catholic-based, and we need to make sure we keep connected with that. But as a new education initiatives come around, and, you know, for example, our STEM Center, we're currently opening a $6 million STEM Center, state-of-the-art facility, because we need to provide our kids with an educational opportunity that will take them not only into, you know, college and beyond, but provide them opportunities in the new initiatives and new opportunities. And, you know, it's always changing, and if we don't keep up with it and make sure that we embrace it, we're going to fall far behind, and I think that's happened to us recently. You know, mm-hmm. Our enrollment's gone down a little bit, but our focus has shifted, our marketing has shifted, and we have to get back to being the De La Salle that we used to be, and that's been pretty good for us for a long time. Matter of fact, great for 99 years as we get ready to celebrate our 100th year next year.
I'm glad you mentioned the STEM Center. I had the opportunity to visit the school last week and get a tour of the new work that's been done there, and that is an incredible upgrade to the school. And one thing that really struck me is the new construction is flexible enough to embrace any kind of curricular change going forward. You know, education at one point had a tendency to commit space to a certain thing like a science lab or whatnot. And the way that you approach this from a flexible standpoint, I think, is really smart in terms of embracing change as it comes forward. And I'd like to ask you, Greg, given all of the new development and stuff that Dan shared with us, how do you see De La Salle being unique compared to other schools in the area?
Well, number one, we're basically the only all-boys Catholic school in the area, and we're a brotherhood. As Dan had mentioned, 99 years of tradition. But our founder, St. John Baptist De La Salle, the patron saint of teachers, and we still are guided by his words and his words of wisdom. But I also think, more importantly, we have a genuine love for our students. We touch hearts. I think that's important, no question. I think that makes us unique in the fact, like I said, that we have 11,000 living alumni who care about the school. Mm. Another thing, in April, we just had the Christian Brothers dinner. We honor an alumnus or a friend of the program, and we had 854 men attend this dinner. I don't think there's a brotherhood in the state of Michigan that can say they had 854 people attend an event. And then our all-student mass, where we bring alumni, benefactors, and our students and faculty, where we can talk about God freely. And I think that's a beautiful thing, and our alumni are very touched by that.
So we're currently chatting with Dan Roan, the Chief Operating Officer from De La Salle Collegiate, along with Greg Essler, the Director of Student Advancement. I want to follow up on your thought with regard to students and what you bring for them every day at the school. Dan, how do you see De La Salle supporting students' academic and personal development beyond the classroom, especially maybe especially as the varsity football coach?
You know, one of the most important things is student experiences. And, you know, I've told our board, I've told our teachers, I've told our administrators and alumni, my focus has been to improve our student experiences. I need to provide the resources with our teachers and staff to go out and get those things done. And so my job is working with Greg and the advancement department and making sure we can find every tool and resource we possibly have. And that includes leaning on a lot of our alumni, which, as Greg mentioned, we have over 11,000 living alums, and many of them are in Metro Detroit, and many of them are willing to come in and support in order to provide these kids with a Catholic faith-based education that is high quality, that gives them an opportunity to go to anywhere in the country. And we need to make sure we're focused on that, not only academically, but also the social atmosphere, the faith-based education. So all those things have to tie into it to provide our students with an experience that when they leave our halls, they want to be a part of this brotherhood forever.
You know, there's no better example of what you just said. In doing research for this interview, I had time to look at the district website, and I think it's really neat that you have identified your staff who are actual alumni from the school with their class number. It made me feel a little old, someone from the class of just a few years ago, but a really neat way to reinforce what it means to stay in that family. One final thought for you, Dan. With all the new development at the school, your new role as Chief Operating Officer, what are some of the goals for De La Salle in the coming years, and how do you plan to engage students, staff, and the larger community in it?
Well, I think the number one goal we already touched on, and that's the student experience. That's hard to measure, you know, and numbers are in value, but that's the number one goal for me. But we also have to increase our enrollment. You know, it's schools like ours, our private schools, you know, enrollment base is important for us, but we also have to grow up with the right student. We have to make sure we have the right kids walking our halls who can handle our rigor academic schedule, you know, compete at the highest level athletically, and yet still, you know, represent our school on and off the courts throughout the community. So that's extremely important that we raise our enrollment. We also need to grow our foundation. You know, our endowment is extremely important to the success in the future for the next 100 years of our school. So that's a major focus of ours. You know, when you look at my role, I think narrows down to, you know, making sure we get the right kids in the right seat, provide them with a great opportunity, and also have the funds or financially to support what we're trying to do.
Dan Roan and Greg Essler from De La Salle Collegiate, appreciate you stopping by the program today. As always, and I've known this for a long time, keep up the good work, and I wish you nothing but a great year.
Thank you. Remember, builders of boys, makers of men.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate your support, and we look forward to this year. Stop by and see us anytime.
After the break, we'll chat with Teacher of the Year, Gail Ashburn. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernois.
Joining us now in the program is Gail Ashburn, a teacher of English, African-American literature, and leadership at Lance Cruz High School, and more importantly, the Macomb County Teacher of the Year for 2025. Welcome to the program, Gail.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. I know very well how the process works to get the award that you have earned, and it's an extraordinary observation on the part of many people and the good work that you do. So I think a good place for us to start would be, what inspired you to become a teacher?
Okay, so what inspired me most to become a teacher, I think, was I had a good teacher, and I want to end up being that good teacher for other kids. I had an amazing second grade teacher. I had just moved into a new district and a new school, and she was super welcoming, and she smiled all the time, and she read to us, and I thought that was amazing, you know, someone reading me books. And then I loved all things that were teachers, you know what I mean? I loved school supplies and stickers, and I was the teacher for my younger sister and my stuffed animals. And teaching has kind of always just been something that carried through my career choices.
Sounds like it's in your DNA.
Yeah.
So when we hear the term Teacher of the Year, it encompasses so many different things, from, you know, teaching and your relationship with kids. Could you describe for our School Talks listeners sort of a typical lesson or project that you believe defines sort of your teaching style and how it impacts students?
I think that most of the time, if I'm teaching a lesson, to me, it's a good lesson. It kind of defines who I am. It's something that students have to work together collaboratively. It's a big part of life in the future, and it's a big part of, you know, them in high school having relationships with each other and with me. So I put them into a group, and we do research projects based on community. And so each group is a city, and then those teams research that area and find out all the things that they would need to know if they were a new family with a high school student that moved in there. You know, how do they get their power turned on? Who picks up the garbage? What day is garbage? How much does it cost to live there? What jobs are available near there? What type of transportation? Who lives there? How much money do they make? How much education do they have? And it kind of builds community from within to outside, because, you know, those kids are also in our school and probably in their group. So students usually have no idea, you know, who lives outside of their 10 block area. And so once they see, you know, it kind of expands their world, and they appreciate learning, you know, how do we figure out how to pay our water bill? Wait, we have to pay for water? And they didn't really understand, like, real life skills that they need, and it impacts their learning every day.
Given the student population in Lance Cruz comes really from all walks of life and abilities.
Absolutely.
And so on, what kinds of things do you do to make all students feel included in your class?
Let's see. Relationships are probably the most important, so I make sure that all of my students understand that, you know, everyone in my class is a human being and is valued, and we will treat them that way. I don't let them pick their groups, which is unpopular in their eyes. I always assign groups, and I always assign seats, and I switch them every 5 weeks so that they're getting to know a new group of students every 5 weeks at a minimum. And I think that if you explain that, you know, those things are not tolerated, we don't name call, we don't, it's just not a thing that is allowed in my room. And they hold themselves accountable and hold other students accountable. Like, hey, we don't do that. That's not what we do. I make sure that there's equal representation in all the things that I do, both, you know, text, the authors are of diverse backgrounds, the books on my lending library, the characters that we read about, the locations of news stories, and I try to make sure that we have a vast selection, so that way then it's easier. And I think that when you use those tools, and then you work through building relationships. I mean, I have fun Fridays every week, and that means that I tell them, you know, we're not doing work, but it's because we're doing all the things that we need to do to review what we've done in the week, but in a game way, and they are working together with their table to build their points for the week.
So we're currently chatting with the Macomb County High School Teacher of the Year, Gail Ashburn, from Lance Cruz Public Schools, Lance Cruz High School in Lance Cruz. Gail, you mentioned how you pull things in from different areas. You use the word vast, and I'm curious what role technology plays in your classroom, and how do you integrate it into your teaching style?
So our district is a one-to-one district, so all students have a device in the classroom, which is super helpful. And because the district provides the devices, we know what devices they are and how they access it. So that type of platform use is, you know, makes for ease of use for students and teachers. All of my curriculum, all of our activities that we do for the week, every piece of paper that they would normally get is also available online. That helps students for their organizational skills, for mm-hmm. their future learning how to use that technology. Mm-hmm. And then I think everything I do, I incorporate technology in some way. We do online polls. Last year I had students make commercials and advertisements and talk shows, all with their district technology to review things that they've learned. I think that we get in a habit of, oh, well, I used to have students do this project and they would research in the library, and now I'm going to just have them research on their device. And it's technology needs to be more than just, you know, taking it from paper to putting it on their Chromebook, but more about enhancing and creating new ways that they can learn to do things.
Mm-hmm. One final thought, given your recognition as Teacher of the Year, what advice would you give to a new teacher who's hoping to come in and make a difference?
I think that the most important thing that you can do as a new teacher is to continue to learn and be reflective, and to let your students know that that's what you do. That's just how you are a lifelong learner, and to show up in that way. I'm the Teacher of the Year, and I've been teaching for many, many years in a variety of ways, but I still am going to school and seeking new professional learning opportunities, whether that be digitally or attending new classes, earning new certifications, and really kind of growing my network of other learners so that I can learn from them and they can learn from me.
Gail Ashburn, you definitely exemplify something we've known for a long time, and that is education is a relationship and not a procedure. And I really appreciate your time on the show today. Teacher of the Year from Lance Cruz High School from Macomb County. Most important, keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us on School Talks.
Thank you so much.
After the break, we'll chat with the leadership team from Saline Schools, who've been strongly supported by one of School Talk's key sponsors, Clark Construction. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program from Saline Schools is Superintendent Dr. Rachel Kowalski and Executive Director of Operations Rex Clary. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you taking time, stopping by. Give our School Talks listeners a perspective. As school has begun over the summer, we spent some time talking to many districts about the kinds of work they do in the summer. And for perspective, much of building renovations and that really can only happen in the summer. So you end up doing a lot of work in a short amount of time. And I know Saline has a strong working relationship with one of School Talk's primary sponsors, Clark Construction, who I've worked with for years and do exceptional work. And I'm excited to hear about some of the improvements that are happening there. And as well for you, Rachel, you're brand new in the superintendency.
I am.
Coming in as your first full school year. So I want to start with you, if I could. What inspired you to pursue the role of superintendent in Saline?
Well, it's my second superintendency. I was a product of Michigan's public school system, a graduate of Lake Orion Schools. And as I looked at Saline and where they were and elevated as a district, I saw a lot of what I recognized growing up in Lake Orion Schools. I also had the perspective of being outside of the state. So as a teacher, administrator, principal in Florida, I also brought a lot of experience in big, large urban districts, and so to meet the needs of suburban districts as well. Mm-hmm. So just saw a lot of opportunity to elevate work and to be part of a great team.
Yeah. My research tells me that you have a pretty strong record in strategic planning and inclusive practices. How do you plan to apply those for the purposes of student achievement in Saline?
Absolutely. So it actually, again, ties in with what attracted me to Saline, which is they've done so much just robust work in systems and structures that support student achievement. So their SAS Compass work that pre-COVID really drove a lot of that student performance was something I looked at, and I thought, wow, what a great way to work with a board, work with a team to tie in a strategic plan. So, yes, I've been part of strategic planning in large districts, Osceola County School System in Florida. And so what I've learned about that and why I think it'll be relevant to our work is we just need to bring the strategic plan to life and make sure it's seen in the day-to-day. When folks see it in the day-to-day and they feel like it's a living document based on their needs and student needs, it really truly comes to life. So I've seen that work before in my first superintendency, increasing enrollment, doing those things, those great things for that district. And I really look forward to bringing that as well to Saline and our team.
You mentioned SAS Compass. Could you help our School Talks listeners understand what that is?
Yeah, so the SAS Compass was created years ago, but it also has lived over time and changed over time based on stakeholder feedback. They've collected data and focus groups. And really, it's a profile of a graduate and what we want to see in our community in Saline and how graduates leave us and the skills that they leave us to go out in the community and do great things.
And following that strategic planning process, I'm sure, given your awareness in Saline about the effect of a diverse student population, especially English language learners, special education students, what is your plan through that process to ensure equity and success for all students?
Yeah, well, all means all. That's something our team here, my new team hears from me a lot. Doing things, like really digging into data, making sure that while we are producing excellent results in student achievement and we see it come alive and when we watch our students walk across the stage and go out into universities and the workspace, we also do have some gaps to address. And so really, making sure we're tightening tier one instruction actually can help us in a lot of that work, because if we're doing really solid tier one instruction and we're providing supports for our teachers to do that, then it's much easier to build in scaffolds and interventions for those students that just really, can get them quickly to proficiency and achievement. Mm-hmm. So that'll be parts of the strategic plan, but I also have found it really needs to be embedded in other pieces of the strategic plan. We can't just say we're going to increase proficiency for English language learners. It has to be a part of other work we're doing that touches human resources, that touches curriculum, teaching and learning. For instance, taking a look at if our staff reflects the diverse needs of our students, and so if they see themselves in the teachers surrounding them every day. So those are some mm-hmm. ways we would look at that.
And all of the great work that strategic planning can provide and information for the district, it really requires a facility that can serve the students and staff. And joining us with Dr. Kowalski is the Executive Director of Operations, Rex Clary. And Rex, let me ask you, as I mentioned at the top of the program, your work this summer with Clark Construction included a lot of bond work that, as we all know well, comes from strong community support. And for the summer work that is concluded with school underway, what were some of the key goals of the work this summer in terms of technology and other upgrades in the district?
Yeah, our work this summer was focused on completing our STEAM Center at the high school along with the new weight room. That was roughly 19,000 square feet addition that started that spring break in 2024. We also upgraded our furniture throughout the building. Saline High School is roughly almost 500,000 square feet. We put in flexible furniture that allows for collaboration. The technology upgrades now will have multiple monitors in each classroom, so that we eliminated the front of the classroom. The students can be flexible, collaborate, move around as needed, and still receive that instruction from the teacher.
You know, just to drill down, you mentioned flexible seating abilities, and I do know one of the trends in education as far as facilities goes is having a classroom that can be many things. You know, years ago we put a science lab in, and that's all you got. If science, or, you know, the big tables and the Bunsen burners and that, and given the rapid change in schooling and curriculum and technology, I think it's smart that you anticipated things needing to be flexible, because who knows where the future is going to go with regard to how students learn and so on. You mentioned the weight room. I imagine it's state of the art for kids in terms of not only school, but after school programs. Can you talk a little bit about the weight room?
Yeah, our new weight room facility is almost 7,000 square feet. Our existing weight room was a little over 2,000 square feet. So during the day, we could only run, you know, 26 kids, 28 kids in that class space in order for them to get an effective workout. Mm-hmm. Now we've almost tripled the size of that space. We've got state-of-the-art equipment. We worked with our designers from King Scott as well as Sornex, and the equipment in there is going to be top-notch. And I'm excited for our student athletes. Most of our students, we have a very high percentage of students that participate in athletics, having over 30 varsity athletic teams.
Yeah. And tell me, I did a little research talking with some folks at Clark, and in my experience in education, I understand Saline was able to leverage federal funds through the Inflation Reduction Act as far as putting in some type of solar roof. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. We passed the bond in 2022, and we worked with our community, and we were going to do a small solar array to charge our electric buses. With the Inflation Reduction Act, we were able to grow that array to complete the high school over 1 megawatt and the middle school as well. So we went from a small array to a very large two arrays at two buildings. Hopefully, we've submitted the paperwork for the middle school. That array is up and running now. And that project alone could see over $1.2 million in federal funds returned back to the district to use for other projects.
That is some forward thinking. You know, between Dr. Kowalski's leadership and strategic planning, thinking about all the students and you taking care of the facilities, if my kids were still in school, Saline would be a great place for them to go to school. So I really appreciate your time on the show today. Congratulations to you on your new position. And as always, keep up the good work.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much. Have a great school year, everyone.
Many thanks to our guests today, Caitlin Gaynor, Dan Roan, and Greg Essler, Gail Ashburn, and Dr. Rachel Kowalski, and Dan Clary. That's all the time we have for today, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this is School Talks on 760 WJR.